This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Welcome to another episode of The Litter Box, a Detroit Tigers podcast, with your hosts, Bill Patterson and Chet West.
All right, JP from the D, you got something you want to talk about
today?
We're gonna go down a different path.
First and foremost, the biggest thing I want to say is Dylan Dingler hit a dinger.
The tongue twister.
It is. But I hope we get to say that a lot this year.
I think and we might.
I have a couple things I wanted to bring up to you, just top line. And this is just kind of going through the news of the week. And, you know, feel free, as I know you will, to offer your takes on this. Number one, quote from one Spencer Torkelson: he will do whatever it takes to get the proper amount of reps in the outfield. He just wants to help the team win. And I have to say, I'm very, very pleased not only with his general attitude and commentary on this, but also he's really, really performing well. Four home runs. He's batting .273 thus far. Quite a few RBIs. I'm just very pleased at what we're seeing from our guy Torkelson, and hope we can find a way to get him on the field more often than not.
That's fantastic.
And, yeah.
I mean, that's really all you want to hear, right?
Do you have any comments on that?
That's all I really want to hear from Torkelson at this point. Like, whether he's looking at the advanced analytics, we commented on this earlier, whether he's looking at the advanced analytics and accepting them, whether he's making changes based on feel, maybe at the end of the day, you want to hear him say, we just want to win. That's it. Not talking about me the whole time. That's great. That's fantastic. We'll see. Like, he's had a great spring.
Yeah.
I sent you an article earlier today that basically said, like, he played his way onto the team.
He did.
This spring.
And I would be shocked, barring injury, of course, that he is not on the 26-man. Speaking of, if I can do newsworthy number two, the Tigers are currently down 1-0 to the Baltimore Orioles at Joker Marchant Stadium. And that's not really what's important, but I do want to walk you through this lineup, which I do think is very indicative of what we might see, you know, come the start of the season when the Tigers open on the West Coast. They've got two exhibition games at Oracle Park against the Giants, and then head south to Chavez Ravine to open the season against your defending World Series champions, the Los Angeles Dodgers. Exciting stuff. We're seeing Justin Malloy in left field batting leadoff again. Riley Green playing center field in the two hole. He's 1-for-1 today, just FYI. And then a little bit of confusion here. Torres supposedly has a little nagging quad injury, so he wasn't supposed to play, but I'm seeing he and Ibanez right now. Ibanez took the first at bat, but it looks like Torres will play today and come in. So that's clearly second base in the three hole. Carpenter in the four hole. No real surprise there. He's DHing, which is interesting. Torkelson playing first and batting fifth. Baez playing third, which we'll get to in just a moment, Chet. But again, not only is he playing third, he's batting sixth, and he's having a pretty good spring.
I know.
And then here's where things really get frightening, which we've alluded to in the last two pods. The bottom third of the order is Trey Sweeney, which, you know, high ceiling, you know, but we're seeing more of the floor right now. Zach McKinstry in right field. Excuse me, Sweeney's at short, batting seventh. McKinstry's in right field, batting eighth. And then our guy, Mr. Mustache,
the mustache,
Jake Rogers, behind the plate at catcher. I get the Jake Rogers part. I get that he's there for defense, for framing. He can be a lot of pitchers' best friends. That all being said, I still am holding out hope that we get to see more of Dingler than less, because the offensive ceiling should prove very, very fruitful going forward. And that bottom third of the order, yikes, is all I can say. Please, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, when we think about the bottom third of the order, you're really hanging your hopes on the fact that somebody is going to show up and hit better than expected, because you've got guys like McKinstry there who had excellent weeks, months last season. And you've got guys like Sweeney there who, you know, the book is still out. He's super young. We don't know what we're going to get from him. And then you've got Baez. And you start the bottom of the order off with Baez. Like, if he plays like the guy that earned the contract that he's currently under, we aren't going to complain, especially if he's at third base. He's not. Josh Jung hasn't shown anything this spring. He needs some seasoning. He's got to go down, do AAA. He's going to have to fix a few things to show that he belongs up there. He's still quite young, too. So I'm not casting him off or anything at this point. But if there's a place for Baez to play, and if he's going to hit 260 or whatever, and, you know, with a little power, and he can play infield. He can still play the field quite well. And I know he did play some third base earlier on in his career at times. I think when the Cubs had a hole there for a little bit, he needed to play there. But it's not like it's out of the realm of possibility of him succeeding over there. So I'm okay with that. I'm okay, because we're kind of stuck there right now. So yeah, the bottom of the order comes down to, like, can these guys pop off a little bit? Can they do a little better than what's expected? And that kind of tells you, are we going to have this great offense, or are we going to be a 1-5 guys and then all of a sudden automatic outs in the back end? And that sort of puts you in that situation where everything's got to score up top, and then we get lucky maybe. I don't know.
I mean, two things. Again, bring up Dingler. You know, there could be relief there at the catcher position. And then the order that I read to you has Ibanez and Torres both at second base. If that somehow shuffled, that also alleviates the McKinstry Sweeney dilemma. I really admire what Javi's doing, trying to be a good teammate and a good soldier, if you would,
100%.
Moving over to third. And if that is something that comes to fruition until we get Matt Vierling back, that could be really, really positive overall. A couple more news. Do you want me to go positive, or do you want me to go negative? You glass half full or half empty guy?
Where does it take you?
Okay. Yesterday, the absolute positive highlight of the weekend was Tarik Skubal threw 100-mile-an-hour fastball and struck out Nick Castellanos, which was just awesome.
He's an ace.
Every way, shape, or form. Bad news, our guy, Maeda, scratched. He's got an illness, undisclosed. More bad news, Meadows is out. They're not thinking he's coming back for opening day. So center field and third base, you know, what we feared the last two pods, what we feared the last 3 weeks is coming to fruition. And it appears that Riley Green is probably going to be your starting day center fielder.
Possibly.
And it appears that at least for the moment, Javi Baez is willing to move to third.
And they have Riley in center today.
Yes,
Malloy's
they do.
In left. So you're going to see more Justin Henry Malloy. You're going to see more Wenzel Perez. You're going to see probably a little more McKinstry playing in the outfield, where he's in right field today. So pieces are going to be kind of moving around out there to see what fits best.
Yeah. And again, disappointing that Chase Young couldn't seize this golden opportunity, because was never a better time for him to be slotted to be that starting third baseman for opening day for the Tigers. But it does appear, given his slow spring, that he'll probably start down in Toledo, and we will monitor him, you know, through the season on this pod as it goes forward. Another newsworthy piece, there is a special emblem. It's a gold Major League Baseball patch that is given to only 6 players this year. Clearly MLB's way of selling more swag and jerseys. So I fully expect to see you in a Tarik Skubal gold.
With a gold emblem patch?
Oh, yeah, yeah. How can you not do this? So the cool part is Skubal's one of 6 players that are allowed or being presented the opportunity to wear this year. The MVPs, Shohei Ohtani and Aaron Judge. The Cy Young winners, Chris Sale and Tarik Skubal. And then your Rookie of the Year honorees, Paul Skens and Luis Gill, are the only 6 that get to wear it. Just kind of a neat, you know, thing.
I'm just
happy for Skubal.
That's cool. That's a cool thing. Now, if one of those guys is, like, you know, batting 200 midseason and is wearing this patch, it's going to look kind of weird. But other than that, hopefully they all, you know, just continue what they did last year.
You know what? We should do something very fun on this. I think Scooble's going to have a great year. Chris Sale's body of work speaks for itself. Otani's like a rocket heading to the moon. It's the rookies of the year that sometimes have that sophomore swamp.
Sure.
And Aaron Judge has not had a good spring.
No.
Speaking of, he went 0-2 against our guy Maeda, so which is not a good look.
Yeah.
Again,
I think he owned him that game.
I don't know what it means, but it's not good.
No.
You know, what literally last week's pod was, hey, we've got seven starters. You know, we're looking really good. We've got depth. And now, maybe not so much.
And that's why the depth is so important. I mean, you can come in with the guys, but one domino falls, you know, and it becomes a house of cards in a lot of ways. And if you don't have the depth, then you go from having, hey, we got this top tier guy. We're going to slot him right in there. Everything's going to be great. Oh, he got hurt. And then what?
Exactly.
Then you're only as strong as your weakest link when it comes to pitching. And so, you know, when's that weak link going to get slotted in there to hold a game or something along those lines? It's like the whole thing. Just you get docked a level or two every time a guy gets hurt. You don't just insert a guy in there and expect the same performance. It doesn't work that way.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Like an offensive line in football, you know, you lose a right guard. It's like, well, it's just one guy. Yeah, it's one guy that now puts a tax on the two guys on the left and right of him. And then what? And then your O-line is that much weaker.
Absolutely.
Exponentially. Absolutely.
Yeah. No, we saw that for the Detroit Lions this past season.
Yeah.
You know, when Glasgow wasn't playing as well. Mm-hmm. Zeitler got hurt towards the end of the year. Yes, you know, Mahogany came in and was very serviceable, but it's not the same.
Yeah, he got in the way. I mean, it's not the same.
Yeah.
You're not running your offense quite as well. Anyways,
all right, back to baseball. The rest of the news, Parker Meadows, as I alluded to before, is to miss opening day. The nerve, as you and I have been referring to it, is now right arm inflammation. So it has gone from a nerve that was supposed to relax and eventually become released, is what the reports that I hear. Again, not a doctor, not professing to be, but that is taking a turn for the worse. Not excited about that whatsoever. I thought for certain he would be back before Vierling, but I don't know that that's the case. And then last thing for folks to check out later today, Major League Baseball's doing a top prospect game.
Yeah.
And the Tigers are taking on the Braves. It's what's called the spring breakout. And so it's guys that aren't going to be on the Major League roster.
I'm sorry. I want to make sure this is on my schedule. Which day is this?
Today.
Today. Okay. So it's today. All right.
Yeah. 4 p.m. And I just think it's really, really neat. Baseball's done some changes, and I know we're going to lead into, you know, the last portion of our first segment talking about some of the rules changes and what to expect this year. I just think this is one that is a really neat way to televise spring training via the MLB network and or other regional sports networks. Mm-hmm. And allow fans like us, or younger fans, older fans, all fans, an opportunity to see who we should be watching in Toledo, who we should be watching in the minor leagues this year.
The prospect game has become a very big piece of baseball and a lot of what baseball is marketing. You can now watch minor league baseball. You can stream it as well as you can Major League Baseball. So you're getting full-blown broadcasts of the Mud Hens, whoever you want to watch in your minor league system. And it's pretty cool stuff. I mean, it's just more baseball at the end of the day, right? So sometimes when my teams that I follow start to dovetail in the season, I'll start watching their minor league squads to see what's coming up to get myself excited.
And then last piece I have is for those that are in market, that does not pertain to myself being in Chicago, you being in the Twin Cities. By the way, whether it is actively snowing outside right now, is it snowing for you as well?
No, it's actually a bright sunny day. It is chilly. We're at about 30 degrees. We've had 65 this past week, and we've also had a foot of snow about 2 weeks ago. But other than that, it's just cold here. We had a little snow yesterday, but it didn't stick.
Okay, yeah, it's not sticking. Yeah. Regardless, the Cubs and Dodgers open at 5:10 Tuesday morning. I will have you know, my daughter Harper is going to be on spring break. She has already set her alarm at 4:45. We are going to go over to Murphy's Bleachers, and we are going to have hot dogs for breakfast, and we are going to watch the Cubs play in Tokyo, where it is 47 degrees, but they play in a dome, so it really won't matter.
That is fabulous. You've chosen an excellent segue here. We have other teams we watch, not just the Tigers. We're baseball fans in general. Who else have you been watching this year? What have you been tuning into? Because I've been tuning into this the Cubs, obviously, throughout spring. They're kind of team 1B, if you will, living in Wrigleyville all those years. You kind of just, it's a disease you catch. You become a Cubs fan. What are you seeing out there throughout the rest of baseball? Any surprises? Anything you're keeping an eye on?
Yeah, great question and good segue. Cubs are obvious interest. I live a 10-minute walk to the ballpark. Wrigley Field, still one of the crown jewels of Major League Baseball. If we did a quick stadium recap for any listeners that have not had the good fortune of going to the friendly confines, you're there for a sun and beer-soaked afternoon. There's one clock in the entire park. When the ivy is green or starting to turn red, and the Cubs are atop the flagpole in center field, it's as good of an environment as you're going to find in Major League sports, or professional sports, and same in Major League Baseball. With that, Cubs are an obvious choice. I think the Dodgers are going to be excellent again. I think the division to watch in the National League is going to be the National League East, because you've got three teams vying for the top spot, and the Braves, the Phillies, and the Mets. The Mets have experienced some injuries. McNeil's going to be out for what appears to be 4 to 6 weeks, which is a big blow to their middle infield. That also being said, I think the most competitive divisions in the American League are going to be the American League West. You've got the Astros and Rangers at the top. I think the Mariners are still going to be formidable. Who knows about the A's? They're playing in a minor league ballpark, and it's going to be 110 most of late June and July in Sacramento. So I don't know how great of a recipe for success that's going to be for them. With that, we've talked about our division, the American League Central. We're optimistic and very bullish on the Tigers. Most others, whether it's analytics, whether it's prospectus, whether it's media writers, are more optimistic on your Cleveland Guardians, your Minnesota Twins, your Kansas City Royals. Regardless, it should be a fun season. And then I think my biggest surprise is the New York Yankees for the run they went on last year, winning the American League pennant, giving the Dodgers all they could handle in the World Series. Injuries, not only Gerrit Cole, but injuries up and down their lineup. Like I alluded to before, Aaron Judge has had a slow start to the spring. Obviously, Gleyber Torres is now a Detroit Tiger, so that weakens them a little bit as well. I'd be surprised if they run away with the American League East. I still think they're the best team in the division. Another surprise is our guy Max Scherzer is now a Toronto Blue Jay and has somehow found Ponce de Leon's fountain of youth, because he is throwing gas this spring.
Let's see if he can stay healthy.
I watch the Blue Jays because I love the way they play. Bo Bichette's like a throwback with the high socks. It seems like his uniform's always dirty. I love Vlad Guerrero Jr. I know you and I were big fans of his pops back in the day. And this is just a shout out to Wrigley.
Never met a pitch he couldn't get a bat on.
No. And he would hit him too.
Vlad swings like hobby swings at the ball, but Vlad made contact.
Well, and like, got hits. Or like, when he kept the bat on the shoulder, he'd walk.
It was incredible. It was a sight to see.
You and I would be like the only, like, amongst 10 diehards that would go to the full Expos series at Wrigley back in the day just to see Vlad the Impaler.
So you've given your kind of rundown on all these divisions now. I think the AL Central and the NL East are going to mirror each other a little bit. I think those two divisions are going to beat on each other.
Yeah.
It's going to be a dogfight for those two. AL West, NL West, I think there's front runners there. I don't see the Dodgers letting up anytime soon.
No.
Maybe the D-backs give them a little fight. Maybe the Padres give them a little fight. Doubt it. I just don't think they have the firepower. And in the, AL East, I love the Orioles. I think they are a team built to just crush. Watching them today, Jackson Holliday is 2-for-2. He's having a great spring. Couser's batting like .380. They have so many good young players coming up. Another couple guys that you could even look at there, Gunnar Henderson, Keston Hjerstad, Samuel Salo, all these guys are just afterthoughts because the other young guys are just crushing it. And of course, they're doing what they can to get some pitching. So I think the AL East is Yankees, Orioles, Red Sox, and maybe they get into a little bit of a dogfight.
So but you
I
don't love like my
the
Blue Jays.
Youth of the Orioles. I don't. I don't think the Blue Jays. I think the Blue Jays are on the verge of trading everybody away, to be dead honest with you. I mean, they can't.
You very well could be hitting the nail on the head with that.
And come the trade deadline, if they aren't in first place, they're going to be shipping people out of there.
Being competitive. Yeah, I could see. just for the listeners, Chet and I have always used Father's Day as kind of our first demarcation point of the season, meaning that anything before that's usually too small of a sample size. Yes, if a team starts 0-13 or, you know, has one of those historically bad starts, yes,
the June you can typically write them off.
Are we super optimistic about the Oakland A's this year? No. Are we super optimistic about, I don't know, the Chicago White Sox? No. You know, I think another team that I really like the way they're built and made up, but again, they're playing at a minor league stadium outdoors in Tampa, is the Rays, and they're going to have a lot of rainouts, and they're going to have really weird start times.
I feel like the Rays and the A's playing in minor league stadiums this season are like an upgrade from what they were doing. Like, I feel like that's an upgrade for the, at least the fan watching the game. I know it's going to get hotter than all hell in Tampa. Don't worry. I get that. And
but
I know
it rains
that
every day there. Typically, like June through September, they get a daily shower.
The weather's going to become a thing. So we'll see how that affects things.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a reason they played in a dome.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and an ugly one at that.
But Sacramento won't get any rain, but
no,
it will be 110. I used to work out there and it was, I mean, hotter than hot. So anyhow, last piece on that, Rob Manfred still is expecting before his tenure ends as baseball commissioner to try to have two expansion teams added. I'm very curious to hear how those talks go, given that you've got the A's and Rays playing in minor league stadiums. Other news, and then my news cycle's over. We can turn to your news. The Rays did not come to a stadium agreement with Hillsborough County and the city of St. Petersburg. It seems to be in an impasse with Tampa as well. So now it seems like rebuilding the Tropicana Dome and the panels that were removed during the hurricane is the best course of action. People are cautiously optimistic, glass half empty, if you would, that they're even going to be in the dome for the start of the 2026 season. The Steinbrenners and the Yankee organization threw them a lifeline this season, but apparently that is not a long-term solution because the Yankees do use that as their rookie ball rehab nerve center for the New York Yankees rehabilitation process, player rehabilitation, you know, that's where their team doctors are, so on and so forth. So I don't see this being a long-term solution. So I do think we're going to have some more shakeout. And I have argued this for years. Expansion in baseball seems so unlikely just because they cannot get the stadiums done.
I think you'll see a team move before you'll see an actual expansion of adding more teams.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think that's what you're getting at there. I think you're going to see like Tampa Bay go to Nashville or something along those lines before you're going to see a Nashville club added to the roster of teams in Major League Baseball.
So I met with the Nashville Park and Rec about this time last year, and the meeting next door at City Hall was Major League Baseball expansion in Nashville. And
they've been on the docket for it for a while. I just don't know that baseball has the desire to take another team on. I mean, it waters down the player pool when you do that. So it gives more guys a chance, but it waters down the player pool. So it's, I don't know. I think they got enough teams. They should move some of these teams that aren't terribly successful. As much as I feel for the diehard fans in those areas.
Yeah.
For losing their team. I don't like that, but sometimes that's necessary.
Yeah. My concern is the Southside Hitmen in Chicago have been rumored for Nashville.
I feel like that rumor's been there forever.
I'm sorry?
That rumor's been there forever. Feel like that exact move has been there forever. And that's kind of what brought the Ball Mall to the south side of Chicago to begin with. They had to generate a stadium plan inside of like 24 hours or something. And that was the idea. That's how you ended up with what you got the sell or whatever we used to call it. I don't even guaranteed rate.
Guaranteed rate now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's the last concrete ballpark because it was the last ballpark built before Camden Yards.
Yeah.
And then everybody went open, airy.
They learned all the mistakes from that ballpark.
Exactly.
Guaranteed rate was all the mistakes. And then they basically said, here's what we don't do.
Yeah, exactly.
We're going to do a ballpark bit at some point this season, by the way. We're going to do like our favorite ballparks. We're going to touch on cuisine. It might be a thing we do like, if the Tigers have an away series, maybe we break down the ballpark if we've ever been there before and give an idea or a feel for what that ballpark's like in comparison to Copa or whatever.
I've been everywhere except for Miami and the new Atlanta. So
you're going to have a lot more to add because I've only been to about 7 or 8 ballparks.
The other thing that I think we wanted to touch on is there's been some rule changes.
Yeah, let's get into the rules.
I've paid very close attention to. The pitch clock has been an absolute success. I know that's not new this season.
I love the pitch clock.
It's sped
up
the game. I can't tell you how much you and I were reinvigorated the summer of 1998 with Mark McGuire and Sammy Sosa, or Sammy Sosa pronounced it, Ma McGuire.
Yeah.
Ma McGuire.
That's like, very good. Good
never
job.
Never get the R and the K. Anyway, you know, home runs landing in Big Mac land and in the old Busch Stadium.
Yeah.
And
anyhow, change is good sometimes.
But then the Yankees and Red Sox and the Rays and the entire American League East dragged the game down because everybody would have to leave the batter box, readjust. Ortiz, God, even Mo Vaughn towards the tail end of his career were just obnoxious in terms of plate appearances and plate appearances taking 5, 6, 7, you know, minutes. And the pitch clock is eliminated.
Changing his, switching his gloves and re-velcroing his gloves after every single pitch.
Exactly. And how many times do you need to scratch yourself below the belt, you know, to readjust before you take a fastball down the middle with the bat on your shoulder?
Do it a lot when I'm not batting, but I understand your point.
So I think that's good. We'll see about the robo strike zone. It's been a mixed bag so far. For I would say 75% of it's been pretty much spot on. There are players that are either diminutive or large that one size doesn't fit all. And that is going to be where it needs tweaking. That being said, I still feel like under Manfred's leadership, baseball's doing things to bring fans to the games, to keep games under 3 hours, so that we don't have these 5-minute at-bats where a guy redoes his batting gloves 16 times. I mean, it's just, it's unnecessary. And so I'm in favor of the rule changes. What are your thoughts?
I have a few thoughts on this and a couple of these things. First of all, this is a great way to find those people who are just stubborn and will not let go of the way things used to be. And look, I love tradition. I really do. It's a part of the reason why I love baseball. But when we get down to this rule change stuff, I love what the pitch clock has done to speed baseball up. I think it's fantastic. If you want to talk to a stubborn fan, you'll find them out there. They'll say, I don't like the pitch clock. It's not natural. Pitchers should get all the time in the world. Hitters should get all the time in the world. And no. This is, look, the pitch clock's a good thing. Secondarily, the strike zone. I like that they're limiting, it's like challenges. They're limiting the amount of these things you can call in a game. So you get a couple choices to challenge a pitch, a strike, or a ball call. I think that's great. Save them for the critical moments. I like an umpire. Maybe the traditionalist in me sits here and says that. I like having an umpire. I like having an umpire back there. I like having, you know, a guy who's, his mood's a little different that day. Maybe, you know, you got to prepare for an umpire that has a slightly different strike zone than, say, another umpire. I like that. That's a piece of the game they're not taking away. They just are for the critical moments, and that's fine. You want to use one during a critical moment? Use it during a critical moment. Glad they're limiting it. Replay, sort of the same for me. I like it. There were some, I don't know if you remember back, but years before replay, you'd watch a game and you'd see a guy that gets called out at first base. You know, maybe a shortstop makes an amazing twirling play and a throw to first, and the first baseman catches the ball, and you'd see the guy was safe by like a whole step easily. But they call him out anyways because they felt, man, the shortstop really put effort in there on that and made a great play. Let's call him out. No, it's where the emotion gets in the way. I think with the umpires, they want it to be an out so bad, or they want the guy to be safe so bad, whatever it may be. Maybe I'm reaching a little there, but like you take that away for the big plays. It's still there for the meat of the game, whatever. But I like giving the managers a couple of those a game to say, no, I need to make sure this is right here. So that's good. So it doesn't change the fabric of the game too much. I saw some other cool stuff today. I was watching the Tokyo series, and they've got all these, Jim Deshays is like the color analyst for the Cubs, was calling them avatars. I don't know if that's the right word, but it's like an AI infused regeneration of like a shortstop. I know Dansby Swanson made like an incredible play at short, right? You get all the camera angles we currently have, But then they had this weird AI-generated view from right behind the shortstop position, like where you can't really get a camera. And it was kind of cool to see them show that angle, even though it did look a little goofy because it was obviously artificially generated to a degree. But it was like his play. Like he, whatever they did, the shortstop was making the play he made. They made it pretty close to accurate. Those things are kind of cool. I don't know how much we're going to see those in season or not. But I do like that baseball's trying to make the broadcast a little more interesting. I do battle with how often I really want to go to the ballpark during the season. And this is for all professional sports. When I have like an 80-inch television to watch it on downstairs with surround sound in the comfort of my own home. So I love going to the ballpark. I don't know if I need to do it 80 times in a season, but I like going a couple times a year. But I certainly don't as much as I once did, maybe just because I enjoy the broadcast a little more. But all these things they're doing, all these advancements they're making, I'm for all of them so far. None of them have fallen flat with me yet. Any of them annoying you, driving you crazy?
No, actually, again, not to give too many bouquets to the leadership of Major League Baseball, because there's definitely some issues. I mean, you should not have two major league teams playing in minor league ballparks. That being said, from the technology side, from the rules side, I think it's great. I'm one that has often thought that a baseball manager is probably the most overrated part of your team, meaning that a great manager, Hall of Fame manager, is probably not really going to make a difference in terms of war per se. That being said, I love the challenges because it actually keeps them involved. And for teams like our Chicago Cubs that decided to splurge on a manager from a division rival last season and didn't see the, you know, the fruit of the labors, it could be good.
I believe a manager's decisions are worth, what, 3 to 5 wins or losses a season, depending on the decision?
I think for a Hall of Fame manager,
I think that's the analytics around the whole thing.
So, but I mean,
well, Hall of Fame manager, if it's 3 to 5 wins, what if it's a crap manager, it's 3 to 5 losses? I mean,
potentially.
That's the swing, right? So,
but you'd also have to argue that a non-Hall of Fame manager or a bad manager also probably has worse players, right? I mean, yeah, Tommy Lasorda was a great manager. That being said, he also had a lot to work with. So, you know, Dave Roberts, great manager. He has a lot to work with, you know? So with that, we touched on the roster already. Jackson Jobe is still throwing gas. Think
he got roughed up the other day, though.
Yeah.
And a lot of, I think it's going to be the excuse game for not starting him with the big league club at the beginning of the season. Kind of gave him the out to keep him out for, you know, till past the 15th of April or whatever the
service time. Yeah.
Service timeline is.
To keep him another year under team control.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be really interesting because if Maeda does go down for any extended period of time, we have no updates on Alex Cobb whatsoever, other than he's not going to start opening day. So that 7-man roster, we're down to 5, but that's with Joe being one of the 5, and that Manning really had a rough spring and has already been sent down and not projected to make any type of 40-man roster or, you know, 26-man roster. It does leave the door open. I really, really agree with you that he's looked good at times. He's also looked really, really rough at times. The control is still an issue. And
he's got to learn to pitch. He's throwing right now. You know, he's at that stage of his career. These young guys, they throw. So it's all based on raw talent and just how hard can you throw and how hard can you break it off. And he's got to learn to actually pitch, which will come. That'll come. I hate to be the bearer of bad news to interject here, but Flaherty's getting absolutely rocked by the Orioles today. He's 3 innings deep. He's given up 4 runs on 4 hits. Couple walks. He's got 5 Ks, which you like to see. The Orioles have a pretty strong lineup they're rolling out there. You're starting to see now here in spring the turning of the tide. We're going to start seeing regulars more often.
Yeah, I mean, this looks pitchers like are the go Orioles deeper. Starting day or opening day lineup. Yeah, no, he entered the day with an ERA just over 2, and he's at 5 now. To your point, 3 innings pitched, 4 hits, 4 earned runs. Here's the problem. 2 walks and then 5 strikeouts, so he's all over the place.
Yeah, he's all over the place a little. And by the way, the Tigers only have 1 hit, so.
Well, I've been saying that all season. Like, if the projections are correct and they finish 4th in the American League Central, I don't think it's going to be pitching. I do think it's going to be batting. So, we're kind of approaching our time limit. Yeah. Is there anything else you'd like to do before we I did want to drop a couple teases for what's upcoming.
We could
upcoming.
Go on all day, but go on, drop your teases.
Well,
let's hear what
we've
you
got
to
a
say.
Couple surprises upcoming for you. We are going to, and I'm going to tease this, have a special guest star to walk us through food concessions and what it's like to be a hot dog vendor at the old Tiger Stadium. Yes. So that's going to be fun. And then when, as we approach opening day, we do have Feed on the Street at Comerica that we will either record and then loop back in, or we might even do a live feed. So a lot of excitement coming as we approach opening day section. Here.
You know, I like my hot dogs a certain way.
I know you like your hot dogs a certain way. Naked.
Save it. We're saving it. That's material we're saving.
All right, Billy.
I'm going to have a very impassioned talk about hot dogs.
Next week.
Next
week. Billy P. from the D signing off. Chet, it's always been great.
Always great, Bill. We'll talk next week.
Sounds good.
Okay, bye-bye.